What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everybody. This is Kevin Scarrett, and I'm with Amy Zander. Amy, how are you?
I am fantastic, Kevin. How are you?
Great, great. Summer, just had the 4th of July weekend, recovering from that. So we had queued up for today's episode a topic that we'll, you know, probably do it next week. But I came across a branding slash news story that was dated just a week ago. And because it is so spot on to the topic of branding and is also a local story here for us Michiganders, I thought I would throw it into the hopper and talk about it.
Ooh, so, do tell.
Okay, so last week, Western Michigan University, did you hear about this? They rolled out a new, they rolled out a press release unveiling their new logo.
I did. Go Broncos.
Yeah, go Broncos. Are you related to anyone who is a Bronco?
My brother. Like that? He went to Western.
Your brothers?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So Francie, my wife, got her master's at Western, and her middle son, Drew, just graduated from there 2 years ago. And so, you know, I know you're the Michigan State person. We're pretty diehard Maize and Blue University of Michigan fans. I think we can qualify for rooting for the Broncos, too. And the reason I point that out is during this logo rollout, there was a lot of talk in among the alumni and other people saying that these design changes were done without consideration of the stakeholders, the alumnus and the people who, you know, people who live in the area and other people, and they just didn't, they don't understand us. It's like, yeah, actually we kind of do. Yeah,
people, you know? Were upset.
Yes, they are really true. I think it was just a handful of people, but yeah, let's go into
that's the thing. If the majority of people don't care or like it and there's a few making noise, that's what you're going to hear always, right? That's
exactly, yeah. Right. So let's get into this. I think it's going to be a pretty quick one today, just because it's it's not really a super substantive change. So when you look at this, I mean, you know, what was your first impression when you saw this or heard about it?
Yeah, so we have a link in our show notes to show you the old logo and the new logo side by side. But I don't know. I saw it and I was like, huh, okay, yeah, that's cool. Like, I can't tell you I ever paid a whole lot of attention to the Western logo before. So, yeah, I mean, I was just like, yeah, I mean, it's not surprising or strange that an institution would up, you know, refresh their look once in a while.
Yeah,
we were talking right before we started recording. I mean, what do you think would happen if like U of M or MSU did that? And because those are like the S and the M are so iconic. But right. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that I would have even noticed, really.
Right. In that conversation, what I told Amy about Michigan's identity is, I think that the only thing that would be taboo, and the university has still stayed true to it, is don't touch the Block M and don't touch the design of the football helmets. I think anything else in the Michigan identity is fair game. In fact, I was like 7 or 8 years ago, they dramatically changed the color of the yellow. They went from this very warm kind of orangey yellow, which was referred to for decades as maize, and is now this bright, bright neon, you know, smacking in the face yellow. And the year that they did that, you know, all the young students and, you know, the faculty, everybody was pretty excited about it. It was seen as a good thing, but the alumni who were used to that warmer yellow. They're like, oh, this sucks. And yeah, so
change is hard.
Change is hard, especially for the old people. Right. You know? Yeah, nice attitude, boomer.
Right? Boomer, right. Right.
Okay, so let's back up a bit and clarify some lingo. When Amy and I use the word rebranding, we're referring to a revamp of all aspects of the brand, including the logo, the identity stuff, the logo, the tagline, the fonts, and, you know, the things that you can see and touch, the color. But it also includes the less tangible things like the messaging and, the tone and the emotional connections and, understanding your target audience and your market and, how are you going to connect with people and emote them to do things.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I interrupted you. Kind of like the one we talked about, Rite Aid and their rebrand. That was a true rebrand. Yeah.
Truly. Yep. Yeah. So in this case, Western appropriately refers to this as a redo of their logo. You know, it's the media, when they picked it up, they kept referring to it as a rebranding project. So it's subtle, yes, but we just want to make sure that we throw in that distinction because the phrase rebranding is a much bigger deal than just, tweaking the logo. So let's point out that neither redoing a full brand nor a simple tweak to the logo, neither of them should be done without some serious thoughtfulness, intent, projecting the impact on the brand. You don't do this thing willy-nilly. You don't just do this offhand. This is a serious thing when you're making changes, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, it was a shocker to me. You pointed out to me that in the grand scheme of things, of how much money universities spend on their sports programs, like Western, it's not Michigan State or Michigan, but they still pay a pretty penny for their football program,
right?
But to find out that this one tweak to the logo is going to cost a projected $250,000 over the course of a couple of years. I'm like, what? How could it possibly cost that much? Who would pay that much? Well, it's not the change to the logo that costs money. It's now swapping it out on everything.
Right.
All the signs and the letterhead and the stationery and the brochures and the course curriculum programs and the t-shirts and literally everything that has a university logo on it needs to now be changed.
Well, in the article, in the MLive article that we have a link to, I didn't see them saying anything about, a lot of universities and schools, like everybody in the world this last year and a half, have been kind of hit, with financial issues and things like that. And nothing in that article said anything about, how much the universities are struggling or financially or anything like that. But the timing might be a little bit weird for some people if they're still trying to recover from the pandemic and all that. But it didn't mention that. So maybe money's not an issue for them. But that I could see people being like, why right now?
Yeah. Well, and I think that, to find out that a project is going to cost, pushing $1 million over the course of time, when as an alumnus, you might think to yourself, wow, that would be way better spent on, changes to the curriculum or, enhancing the quality of the education for the students, do something for the students as opposed to just tweaking your logo. And, of course, that's going to throw the marketing people who affected the project into defensive mode. And that absolutely did happen here. So let's actually just, dive into it just a little bit, so. Let's do the look at the logo a little bit and evaluate it and take our own little dive into it. So,
right. Go ahead. Yeah. So if you're driving and listening to this, obviously don't do this right now, but go to the show notes, look at the old logo and the new one side by side. Go to brandarchetypes.com and find your way to the post called Bronco Branding Redo. So, I don't know, Kevin, you asked me this earlier, and is it me or is there just not a lot going on here? It doesn't seem like that huge of a change.
That is my, I think that's why both of our initial reactions when we saw this was, okay.
Right.
I would not have been one of the alumni that is just going off the deep end, nutso crazy, upset raging.
Right.
I mean, and that is happening, by the way. That,
yeah.
That is absolutely happening.
And again, just a handful of people, not everybody.
Yeah, just a handful of people. So, okay, so let's do a quickie description here. You take the old standalone W, it's now enclosed in a circle. Okay. They didn't change the W at all, right? They just put it inside of a circle.
Same font, same everything.
Right. The icon was, they called it the ghost horse or the gross bronco or whatever. I forget what the term that they used, but it's just a stylized head of a bronco, a horse's head. The old logo, it was facing right, and the new logo is facing left.
Okay. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. That's a change.
He wanted a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But, you know, if I were to present a design project to a client and the only thing I did was I flip it horizontally, that'll be $5,000 for this new logo. What? That's how I felt.
Right. Yeah. Canva has a little button on there where you just flip it.
That's right. That's an awfully expensive click. So the other change to that part of the icon was they stripped out the colors. The entire color palette from the old identity was 7 colors, 2 primary colors, a dark brown and a goldish yellow, and then 5 other kind of accent colors. Well, the new identity is they stripped out 5 of those 7 colors, and they are now using just the brown and the gold. Okay, so I think that pretty much sums up the entirety of the project, is those 3 changes, making the W in the circle, flipping the horse's head, and stripping down the colors. The words Western Michigan University were a very fine-stroked, sans serif, really super spread out, simple font below the W. And now it's a much bolder, hugely heavy, italicized, bold font. So it's the name is really pronounced. It's probably the only significant substantive change that happened.
And I like it better. I think it's a better font.
Yeah. I think they were kind of going for kind of a classy look before, and now it's a much more traditional university look to it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I said this earlier, like, I'm pretty sure that unless you knew that this project happened, you would likely not really notice the differences. And in the article, Tony Proudfoot, who's Western's vice president for marketing and strategic communication, said that the new logos are part of a sophisticated, simple, coherent visual identity, and it will have a financial return with increased competitive advantage. I'm not really sure how they determine this financial return, but, you know, I mean, Western already has a pretty pronounced, you know.
I read that, and I'm like, competitive advantage. Yes, the horse facing the left, that's going to definitely financial competitive advantages there. Oh, you know, hey, why did we succeed in increasing our student base by 15%? It was the direction of the horse's head.
Right. Yeah. I don't know how they determine that, but he's got to say something, right? I mean, he's got to.
Right. Yeah. I found it interesting, but not surprising at all that a lot of the alums were upset by these changes. And at this point, there were proposed changes, but it's, you know, it's happening. So although when I first heard about the reactions, it was absolute outrage in some cases, I was surprised to see that after hearing this outrage, how subtle these changes were.
Yeah.
They really are not substantive. And I mean that truly. The changes are not substantive. I don't agree that their claims that the cost of the change is warranted by future improvement of competitive advantage. I don't know. My belief is there's a fine line. There's a dance of if you're going to make a logo change, A, there has to be a really significant and important reason on why you're doing it. Like if you have been talking amongst your stakeholders for years that you're starting to get a little dated and you have kind of a 70s feel or something like that, it's like, okay, it's time for a change. Well, in a context of that discussion, you're going to have a significant change. You know, it's not going to be this lightweight little, you know, put the W in a circle kind of thing, right? Now, the other side of that, other edge, the very sharp other edge is if you go too far, then it's the changes are jarring and confusing, and people are like, they don't even think that they're looking at the same university's logo. It's like, what's going on?
Right.
Yeah, you've gone too far. So it's very much a fine line.
Well,
so,
and a lot of it just has to do with your rollout too, which they didn't do a great job here because they made people upset, but yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah. So you have to understand that making a logo change to an organization of this size means that you have to change every instance of every logo everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Which is where the cost comes in. So signs, documents, buildings, clothing, publications, literally everything needs to be changed.
Yeah, I just can't see someone, you know, like we said before, I can't see someone 2 years from now saying, hey, that's the wrong logo. The horse's head should be facing left.
Right.
Oh, no, that sign's inappropriate. It's using the tan color in the look. No, no.
Right.
These are subtle enough changes that if they had done a full rollout without telling anybody, very few people would have noticed. And the handful of people who would have noticed would go, hey, that's different.
Yeah.
And then they would have kept walking onto their class.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, we can agree. We just said like this was not a good rollout. And yeah, I don't know if there's any like rules or laws that say like institutions like this that are public have to announce like what they're spending on a change like this. But honestly, I'm not sure I would have even said like if you didn't have to, I'm not sure that I would have announced that. But I don't know. I mean, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. This is hard stuff. It really is. I feel for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and just to be clear, since we're not in any way a part of this project, I mean, obviously we have our opinions, but we don't know what conversations transpired or what their logic was. But let's say in their discussions, they said the thin strokes and small lettering of the name and the old logo needs to be more impactful. The new logo should have a heavier, bolder font face. Making the type in italics will give the logo more energy. Like if that was said, I can see the logo, but it's not really a substantive change. It's not, yeah. I mean, and who knows what the, I mean, it almost feels like they faced the horse the other way just for change sake. Like what reason could they possibly have for that? Like, I don't know.
Right. Okay. So there is one change that I will give them props for. They did strip the color palette down from 7 colors. But I think they went a little too far. Instead of saying we used to have 7 colors, now we only have 2 that are allowed. Well, what if you have an application where you need a 3rd accent color? Well,
or like black, because they went from black. I mean, the
right?
From to brown and like gold. And I'm like, what if you need that black?
Yeah, right. So I think a better choice would have been saying, okay, these are the 2 primary colors. And these accent colors are only allowed if the situation warrants it. Use them judiciously and sparingly. You know, you're pointing out right up front that you're going to use complementary approved colors in a sparing way. And you define that up front. Well, that gives the designers flexibility. Now, they don't have that flexibility because the new guide is, nope, we're not using those colors anymore. Okay. Right. Yeah, that's so. I do like the idea of having a much simpler color palette, though.
Yeah, so, I mean, 7 is kind of a lot.
Yeah,
but yeah.
So, the thing about the color palette, and we've already kind of said it here, is that you know putting those guidelines in the style guide, just changing the style guide, so designers will affect the change into the future. That's very subtle. And who in the heck would have ever have known that the style guide was changed?
Right.
They just do it and don't ever say anything about it and just make sure it happens. Right. That's the quiet, slow rollout. You know, how easy would it have been to keep the color palette as is and build in and design those restrictions. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. That approach would take longer and it would result in a mix of both logos for a longer period of time, but almost nobody would notice or care.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is hard stuff. It's hard stuff. You know, to get it right takes a lot of thoughtfulness and work. And I, you know, to be fair, this slow rollout thing is kind of what the university was trying to pull off. They didn't do the big splashy, you know, news story, front page of the newspaper, you know, posted on every single Western Michigan alumni blog. You know, they didn't do the big splashy rollout. Mm-hmm. They were trying to be covert, kind of, in a way, right? But you know, you just can't overshoot, and you can't undershoot either. And in this case, I think they undershot pretty dramatically, and that's a big price tag for undershooting with it. It's just a small tweak, right? If you overshoot, it's too jarring, it's confusing, it dilutes your brand, it causes chaos. The confusion is just not worth it. And unless there's an absolute, immediate, and obvious reason to change the logo, you know, like being outdated, like we were talking about before, that makes sense to make a change to your identity if you have a need for it. In this case, I really don't think they had a need for it. I don't see that the new identity is going to change anything from what the old identity was already doing.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. So but to be fair, the whole behind the scenes approach is what they were going to try to do
right.
until the vocal alum caught wind and right. dove in headfirst into the deep end of the rage pool.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and like one last point here, like Carney, the article and other things, like there were claims, the people who are upset, that the university didn't seek out enough input from stakeholders like faculty and alumni and students, etc. And I mean, I don't know how you feel, but like on this point, the university definitely made the correct decision to limit input.
Yes.
You know, good design and good branding rarely comes out of committees or crowdsourcing or from enormously large groups of inexperienced non-branding pros and non-designers. Like, I mean,
like the alumni.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. Mark, we have talked about this so much. Like, marketing is one of those things that everybody has an opinion on, but not everybody has a background in.
Yes.
And so it's hard, you know, and we encounter that with our clients too, just educating them and explaining, well, you know, this is why we're saying this or that. And people often like what they like and don't know why they like what they like. And so there's that, you know, and I don't know. I mean, how many people do you ask in something like this? I mean, you hire a marketing team or you have a person on staff to do their marketing job. Right. Like that's what they're doing. You don't ask 75. There are too many cooks in the kitchen. Right. That's the
Absolutely.
Whole thing. Yeah.
I totally agree with you. And just, you know, let the listeners kind of in on, well, what would you do, Kevin and Amy, if you're so smart? Right.
Okay, so things.
Yeah. About some, you know, kind of like to think that we've been around the block a few times. So let's give an example with our branding projects. Well, let me give you a specific example. For our regular listeners who heard a podcast where we interviewed an agency owner, Rafael Barbosa in Massachusetts, this is, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 months ago, he and I collaborated on a project where we were helping Salem State University. This is just northeast of the city of Boston, right along the coast in Salem. The university was making a change, not just to their identity, but their overall approach to the entirety of their brand. And they were very interested in the whole archetype concept. And what we typically do is we'll have a session where we invite people to fill out a questionnaire. And then when we have a formal sit down to get the ball rolling on talking about specific changes and establishing the archetype, there's kind of this brainstorming session where we say, well, you know, a brainstorming session really has to have more than two people. You know, you can't do brainstorming session with one. Two is not very effective, but three's pretty good.
It's like a light sprinkle, not a storm.
Exactly right. 5, 6, 7 people, that works.
Yeah.
8, 9, 10 people, it starts to get to be a little heavy.
Oh,
if you go more than 9 or 10 people, it's out of control, right?
Right.
We had...
you're gonna die. I know.
Yeah, it was like 40 people, yeah. 45.
That's insanity.
Maybe 50.
That's insanity.
Oh, my. And now when I heard that this was going to happen, I about died. So how we solved that problem... Well, with that problem... We didn't solve it because we endured it. But how we solve that problem generally is if we have a large company or a large group of stakeholders, we have all of them give their input in the form of filling out the questionnaire. Mm-hmm. Everybody's able to put it, but they don't participate in the sit-down sessions.
Right.
So you create, and here's the point, you create your processes so that the stakeholders feel like they were given input, but they, and they do give input.
They do, yeah.
They do give input, but they're not involved with the nitty-gritty grinding of the decision-making process and the real hard, thoughtful, you know, you don't want the session where arguments happen to have, you know, 3,000 people involved.
Right, just, right.
Yeah.
Right. It is good, you know, though.
Five or six is good.
Yeah. Yeah. And why that's important, too, is because they're not, you do want people who aren't exactly on the same page so that you can have good discussions and talk about this archetype versus that archetype and like whittle it down. That's right. Good. But just to clarify, you do need to have anybody in the room who's going to be a ultimate decision maker.
Anyone with veto power.
Veto power, yeah. Because you don't want to come up with this archetype and then have somebody be like, oh, yeah, we're not doing that. That happened to me once when I was working with a private school. And it was a Catholic school. And the priest came in at the end and was like, I don't like that. Nope, we're not doing it. And I'm like, wow, we just wasted 4 hours.
Yeah.
So,
or how about like 4 months?
You make the decision,
you start rolling forward. Yeah. I've had the CEO swoop.
I love that.
They swoop in.
Love it when it happens, but I like that term.
I like the term. They do their dictate and then they swoop out of the room and then life is better for them.
But right.
They feel good.
Yep.
And that's all that really matters. But the I probably endured that, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 times now. And it's so painful the first time you experience that you really try to avoid it in future meetings.
But our process now is to just be like, who has veto power, who needs to be in on this meeting, you know?
And warn them in advance. If they're not part of the meeting and they exercise the veto power, we warned you.
Right. It's kind of like when you have a contractor come to your house and they're like, oh, do you need your husband or your wife here? Will like to make the decision. And the smart ones like ask that up front. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, no, it's fine. I can make the decision. They're like, are you sure? Are you sure you don't need your husband here? Because they've probably been burned that same way before. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So there's Western Michigan's new logo.
Go Broncos with your new logo.
Facing to the left, not to the right. There you go. Okay. So why don't you give us a wrap up?
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate you as our listener. If you know of any company or organization that is talking about a rebrand or a redoing their logo, let us know. We'd love to watch a new project from start to finish and discuss it, hear your opinions about it. If you're a Bronco fan and you want to weigh in on this, let us know. Contact us what you think about the new logo. If you have any questions or comments or anything, you can call us. Our contact information is at brandarchetypes.com, and you can follow us on the social at Brand Archetypes.
Awesome. Thanks, Amy.
All right. Go Happy green.
Summer. We'll talk to you soon. Go blue.
Go green. Have a good one, Kevin.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.